Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, July the 3rd. Happy day before Independence Day. So are you on or planning a summer vacation this year? Where to? We want to know some of your favorite destinations in the USA and Canada, or those places you are hoping to visit someday. Tell us about them and tell us why you're looking forward to seeing them. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or if you have a trip planned somewhere, our guest might be able to suggest some places in that region that you might want to see. She wrote the best-selling book, the internationally best-selling book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, and now is out with another one, 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada Before You Die. And she's here to talk with us about traveling this hour, including some places that we might want to travel to right here in our own backyard. There are several places listed in Wisconsin that she recommends. As I mentioned earlier, I'm going to talk about getting some ideas for my Philadelphia trip later this summer. And I invite you to call in with your suggestions or questions about places where you are traveling or places that you've loved. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Patricia Schultz joins us now to talk about the 1,000 places to see in the USA and Canada before you die. Good morning and welcome back.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. You've been very busy.
I have been.
Traveling the world for the 1,000 places to see before you die. And then that was, you were the executive producer of a Travel Channel series based on your first book.
Yes.
And now this one.
I know. I'm a busy gal.
Yeah, time for a vacation soon?
Well, you know, I have this great job where vacation is work and work is vacation and always the twain meet.
Yeah, you are very lucky that way. How different was the experience writing this book, focusing on America and Canada, from writing the first book, which covered the entire globe?
You know, well, it was certainly suddenly more doable, and that wonderful expression of being able to wrap your head around something, I had that luxury here, because not only was it a single continent instead of a planet, but it was also my home turf. It was my homeland. Mm-hmm. It was an area where I've been traveling since, you know, my parents threw me in the back seat at the age of two, taking off for family trips and such. So it was much more familiar and comfortable, and it seems somehow more attainable and doable in a concentrated period of time. The first book was daunting. So is this, in every sense of the word, North America, because of the possibilities. And I had people who actually said to me, how will you ever find 1,000 places in North America? And I thought, you haven't traveled much in the U.S., have you?
Yeah. Well, do you ever, do you have a list of these places before you start traveling around, or do you just stumble on some places?
Very much both, because on your way to destination X, you'll happen upon dozens of different things, some of them quite well known that you had kind of discounted as being of not great interest, and you find it to be quite the opposite, or some great gems that, you know, you hadn't even heard of or had, you know, again, underestimated their interest or importance. And there's just so much that, you know, really until you're there in first person, because the Travel Channel doesn't always do justice, or I should say media or anything that's kind of monodimensional is never ever the same thing as being there in person and seeing it in real life, in real time.
Well, that's true, but, you know, sometimes that's where you might get an idea about a place to visit, or you read it in a book like yours.
Yeah.
You know, where do you get the ideas?
Just about everywhere. I talk to people, I overhear, I read, I research the internet, boards of tourism, people who have just come back, people who are hoping to go to places I've been myself, movies, you know, one great cinematography moment. And, you know, you're off to Montana or Dancing with the Wolves or, you know, Thelma and Louise, that great road trip that they did through mm-hmm. Utah. You know, anything that kind of grabs my interest or has me sit up and take notice, because, you know, a piece of music, Zydeco music, has always just made me tap my toe. And I went to Cajun country in Louisiana for the first time this year. So, you know, anything you could mm-hmm. Just happen upon a poster that speaks to you, and you know you're behind the wheel.
Yeah. Do you ever visit a place and say, "Nope, this one doesn't make the cut"?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but I've never. You know, there are countless things that didn't make the cut. But did I walk away thinking it was wasted time or, you know, a useless mm-hmm. trip? Never, ever, ever. Because there's always something great that comes of it. You know, an interaction with the local guy who runs your motel, or a great barbecue dive, you know, down the road and off the interstate that you happened upon, or a local rodeo that you drove through, never knowing that it. You know, so there's always something, but are they magnificent, life-altering experiences? Maybe not.
Yeah, well, I won't ask you to name a place that disappointed you. I don't want to diss anybody, but is there a place that completely surprised you, a place that you might have been a little ho-hum about and then had a really unexpectedly wonderful experience?
Yeah, you know, I just went to, for the first time in my life, and as an East Coaster, because I'm from New York City, I just, you know, I knew where it was on the map, but just barely, but I had never been to Idaho, for example, before. Mm-hmm. And it gets a lot of attention and tourism from the West Coast because of its location. But we have a very limited idea of geography in this country because of the vast landmass that we have here. And there are areas also in Canada that just blew me away, parts of Alberta and British Columbia and the coastline of British Columbia, which is just magnificent. So, you know, you think you have it figured out, whether you think it's a, as you said, ho-hum destination or nice enough, mm-hmm. but then you get there and you see that it's nothing short of awesome. And that's why I'm hoping this book kind of opens people's mind to just what is out there. And a lot of it is right under our nose.
Yeah, we certainly have a number of places right under our noses here in Wisconsin that you list in your book, which we'll talk a little bit about, as well as many of the other areas. One of the areas that I might have said, uh-oh, tourist trap, was the Wisconsin Dells, but you do have that listed in your
own. Yeah, and you know, I have a mm-hmm. soft spot in my heart for tourist traps, because certainly Disney World is mm-hmm. the, you know, the mother load of all tourist trap destinations. And but can you not go to Disney? You know, can you mm-hmm. have a six-year-old kid and not bring them to Disney World? And I've gone to Disney World and the Dells without children. And I think if you let yourself kind of relax and, you know, kind of dissolve into the fun of the place, then mm-hmm. you walk away with something that's been a real enjoyment, because travel can be a whole slew of things, including inspirational and educational and even romantic and poetic. But it also has to be, I think, just fun at the end of the day. Yeah. And the Dells is that kind of place, and the area around it. It's, you know, it's one of those places that, had I written a book called 100 Places in the USA and Canada, I'm not sure the Dells would be one of them. But suddenly I had this possibility of, you know, expanding the breadth of destinations I was including. And I like those kinds of places. Would I go to them, you know, like once a week for the rest of my life? Maybe not.
Yeah. And in case anybody's listening in Wisconsin Dells, I visit Wisconsin Dells quite often.
See?
And I have a lot of fun there. And one of my favorite restaurants is there, too. So it's it's a nice place to visit. Why do we love to travel?
We love to travel for just countless reasons, and it's such a personal thing, too. If you're asking me, Patricia Schultz, mm-hmm. I love to travel because I leave behind the day-to-day stuff. I leave behind the worries and the emails and the deadlines and the phones and the stuff that is familiar to me and comfortable to me, because I like to feel exhilarated. I like to feel that I've gotten away from it, that I'm on to the next great adventure. I love to wake up in a city that's not my own, whether it's Chicago or Paris. I like to feel that there's promise and that the whole day is before me and there's new things and new people and untested restaurants and exhibits and serendipity that just leads me down the wrong block and onto something that will, you know, I'll remember 10 years later. And, you know, it's the promise and the adventure, and it's the potential excitement of, you know, all of this. And I think it's just removing yourself from the couch. You know, it's comfortable on the couch. We know where the couch is. We know it's, you know, not going to present any challenges or difficulties. And, you know, put a remote in your hand and you could spend the rest of your life there. And how sad is that?
Yeah. We are talking with Patricia Schultz, author of the new book, 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada Before You Die. Do you have some sites on your travel list? Where have you always wanted to visit and why? Or what was one of the most memorable trips that you've ever taken in this country or in our neighbor to the north, Canada? 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up this afternoon between 4 and 6, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. And after 5, Ben's guest says that saving more and spending less can bring us a more enriched and happier way of life. That's coming up after 5 o'clock this afternoon. We're talking about travel and some places you might want to travel to, and wondering if you have any questions about a place you might be planning on visiting. We are talking with Patricia Schultz. You may remember her as the author of the international bestseller, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. And she was also the executive producer of the Travel Channel's television show based on her first book. We talked with her both times for the first book and for the Travel Channel's series, and now she has a new book out. She is the author of 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada Before You Die, and we welcome your questions for her or your examples of places that you visited that you loved, or places that might be on your travel list. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Tim in Hastings, is it Hastings, Minnesota, is with
Hastings,
us. Hi.
Minnesota, yep.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm wondering if you've ever heard of the Huron Mountain Club. It's in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan.
No, I haven't, although I have been to the Upper Peninsula, which, if you were to ask the average New Yorker, what the heck is that? They might not know. And it's a fascinating kind of otherworldly out there area. So I'm interested in the Huron Club. What is it called?
It's the Huron Mountain Club. It's actually, it was started by Henry Ford and a bunch of other, you know, early 1900s millionaires. And it's all virgin timber, and it's basically a self-sustaining community.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's, have you ever seen the movie The Last of the Mohicans?
Yeah.
That's where it was filmed.
Yeah, so tell us what, Tim, tell us about what you do. I mean, do you go and visit there?
When I was younger, I was probably 14 or 15. My dad likes to pick new places in the country, and he likes to go gold prospecting. So he'd pick an area that has never had a gold rush just to go basically play in the sand. And we went up there, and I think we found in 2 weeks of being up, you know, in the creeks and everything up there, we found like 3 flakes of gold.
You created your own gold rush.
That's what my dad liked to do. So
yeah,
we went up to the Huron Mountain Club, and When I was there before, they were offering tours for like $12 a piece. And there's a place that is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen where you can see 12 waterfalls at once.
Oh, wonderful.
And it's just waterfall after waterfall after waterfall up there.
Yeah.
It's just gorgeous.
Sounds beautiful.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Tim, for the call. And I'm writing that place down. That's not too far away.
Yet another 1,000 places in America.
That's right. You can keep on going and going. Joe in Appleton, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to call and make a comment. One of the great places that I thought to see, I went on my honeymoon this past fall to New York City. I'm originally from Wisconsin and I've lived here my whole life. And I've been to Chicago, and I think people might say if they want to go to a big city, they can go to Chicago or Minneapolis. But I don't think that you quite get the experience that you do in actually being in Times Square in New York City, you know, as a place in America for popular culture. And everything that you can do and see there, it's just got it all. And you could probably go back, I would imagine, 10 different times and see 10 different things. We were there for a week, and it was an absolutely wonderful experience.
Hey, how about 100 different times?
100. I believe 100 different times, exactly.
You know, every time I walk outside of my front door, I'm just hit with this wave of energy all over again, and I've been here for decades. There's nothing like it on the planet, and it's true. You know, you go to Chicago, and I, as a New Yorker, go to Chicago and think, wow, this is a great city, but I understand that while it's of a similar vibe or vibrancy, it's another entire thing, and hence the beauty of Chicago, because it doesn't pretend to be New York. But all of these cities across America have their own character, and they have their own allure. And I think I love big cities, but I understand that when people think honeymoons and vacations, they want to be unplugged and not, you know, overwhelmed. But I love going to Austin or San Francisco, or Seattle's a great town, too. There are magnificent cities all across America.
And one of the neat things, too, is, I mean, the attractions were wonderful as well, but I think one of the things that my wife and I took away from that, and she had been previously, were the people standing on the street corner and hearing 10 different languages, or talking to a taxi cab driver that came to the country from the Middle East 20 years ago, got his college education, and discussing current politics with him. I mean, things that you would just never think of that happen on a day-to-day basis. Just a wonderful trip. I'd highly recommend it.
Yeah, I do too. That was one of the best trips I've taken in the past 5 years or so too. What would you recommend we see in New York that, you know, maybe outside the top 10 tourist attractions?
Well, there's a part of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, which is called the Cloisters, and it's up in the far northern reaches of Manhattan, and it's a very quiet place of respite. And they were medieval cloisters that were dismantled piecemeal and brought over from France, I think, and reconstructed here. And there are medieval art exhibits, exquisite grounds. There are concerts in the evening and in the summertime. And it's all a corner of Manhattan that we love and that we respect and revere almost for its kind of retreat-type environment. And you do get a certain number of tourists, but very kind of insider-savvy tourists who know to search out these places that are not on the average beat. But like we were saying, I think you almost want to be in the very hub of it all, you know, that kind of pulsating 24/7 where it's great people watching just to sit in an outdoor cafe. And for the price of a cappuccino, you can see some pretty remarkable stuff.
Yeah. Thank you,
Street theater.
Yeah, thanks very much for the call. I mentioned that I'll be going to Philadelphia. This is the first time that I've ever been to Philadelphia, a little later this summer in August. I have a niece who goes to school there at Temple University. And,
oh, nice.
Yeah, her father is my brother-in-law who grew up there, so he can show me around from what he knows. But we have limited sightseeing. I was interested to see in your book, you have a number of places in Philadelphia to visit. Anything come to mind that is a must-see as far as you're concerned in Philadelphia?
Well, I think the whole historical importance of Philadelphia when it was at the center of a very young America is important to experience and very enjoyable. I mean, the beauty of Philadelphia is that it's a lot of education that is experienced in a very pleasant way, because the just walking through the cobblestone streets and experiencing Independence Hall and being with a ranger who will bring that whole chapter of America to life is nothing short of a great afternoon or a great weekend. So one of our good eating destinations on the East Coast as well. There are a lot of very upscale, very impressive restaurants there within the last 5-10 years, giving New York City a kind of run for its money. But it also has a lot of great ethnic neighborhoods, and of course the iconic Philadelphia cheesesteak sandwich. Mm-hmm. That is always a must do for travelers, and beautiful museums, great parks, and I think it just speaks of history.
Right.
Even if you don't have much of an inclination towards historical cities, this city just oozes with that, and I think it's special for that reason.
It's funny you mentioned about how you might get an idea in a movie. We had this idea of visiting Philadelphia for quite some time because my niece is there, but my husband, we saw the latest Rocky film, and he actually said, we should see that art museum and those steps, and we should go to Philadelphia this summer. So,
well, don't laugh, because I'm sure 90% of the people that run up those steps are not going inside to the museum.
Yeah.
They're just recreating their Rocky Balboa moment.
Right. Well, we'll try to go inside, too. Alan Appleton, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering, next week, my son and I are kind of in the same area you were just talking about. We're taking a trip to Gettysburg. We only have 4 or 5 days, so we can't go on to, Washington, D.C., which is pretty close. But I was just wondering, is there anything else around Gettysburg or in Pennsylvania? The only other, another site that I always wanted to see is Falling Waters. I don't know if that's on your list.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't exactly know where that is or if it's close to that area.
No, what is that?
Falling Water is calling from Wisconsin.
Uh-huh.
Falling Water was a magnificent private home that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright.
Okay.
And it's one of the few private homes that is open to the public. And it's actually off in western Pennsylvania, near not all that far from Pittsburgh. So it's something of a drive, but it's doable. And it's a real kind of flip side of the coin for an otherwise historic soaked moment in Gettysburg, which is very fascinating. And in fact, over the 4th of July, I don't know if you'll be there the weekend, they have all of the reenactments, and people come from all over America and recreate these historic battles in moments in the history of Gettysburg. And you're very close to the Maryland border, just south of that, and you head into the Chesapeake Bay area, which is very rich in 18th century, 19th century, small little fishing villages and towns, and getting out on the Chesapeake Bay in the old schooners and great crab restaurants, outside restaurants. It's a lovely area of Maryland, too. And Annapolis. You're close to quite a number of places in Maryland.
Yeah,
we're leaving Monday and returning Friday, so I don't know how much time we're going to have. But
you'll miss the 4th of July stuff, obviously. But
right.
That might be a good thing.
Yeah,
it's so
that's
crowded
right.
over that weekend.
Yeah. Speaking of Frank Lloyd Wright, you do have on your list in Wisconsin Taliesin in the Frank Lloyd Wright country. So
yes.
Let's go next to Dina in Marion. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just curious if you have the Albuquerque Balloon Festival in your book.
Yeah, I sure do. And I had it in the first book as well, which had quite an abbreviated North America chapter because it was one of so many chapters trying to kind of embrace travel around the globe. But because it was such a standout for me, it was in the first book, and then, of course, as a result, is also in the second book. But, yeah, that's pretty wild. I think there are, well over 500, some say 700 balloonists, balloon people,
mm-hmm.
ballooners who come from all over the world, mostly America, to fly these massive, multicolored, multi-shaped balloons that take off every morning and then again late afternoon, and you can go up with them. But it's a big party atmosphere. They do it every year. It's the largest balloon rally in the world, I think.
Yeah. It was one of the most moving experiences that I have ever encountered in my life.
Yeah.
It was just fantastic.
Yeah. It's very, very special. Even if you don't go up in one of the balloons, because I know it can be quite expensive, but we did either, because you get into this moment like, am I ever going to come back to this again? And they have these mass ascensions, they're called, like every morning at 5, which means you have to get up at 3 and it's still dark out, and you're thinking, am I nuts? They should be paying me. But it is like an almost religious experience. It's just beautiful.
And then to be down on the field when they are inflating the balloons,
yeah,
and just right there amongst everything is just incredible. And how about Shipshawana, Indiana?
Yeah, I love Shipshawana, Indiana, for its name alone. It's one of the great, it's one of the most important Amish communities in all of North America. I think the largest one is in Ohio. And it originated in Lancaster, these Anabaptists who fled Germany, I believe, in the 1700s and came to Pennsylvania because they were welcome there. And they established themselves in Lancaster. And as, you know, the modern world kind of encroached upon them, they moved out to Shipshawana and some moved to Ohio. And there are other pockets of Mennonite and Amish elsewhere in America. But Shipshawana is very, very, very authentic. And it's beautiful countryside because they've farmed all of the agricultural land. I believe there are probably 20,000 or so Amish in the Shipshawana area. And every Wednesday there's a horse auction, which is kind of crazy because the Amish come from all over, and there's a kind of flea market too where they buy their goods and their you know, replenishments for the week or the month, and they come in by horse and buggy, and they use it as a kind of social moment when they exchange news and goods, and the young girls meet their future beaus and all of that. It's a very special moment every Wednesday in Shipshawana.
Dina, thank you so much for the call. And thank you for the idea of that balloon festival. I've got that on my list now. Bob in Menominee, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning. One
place that we've enjoyed as a family is Prince Edward Island in Canada.
Yeah.
Is that in your either
of
your books?
It sure is. You know, hey, what's not in my book, right?
But Bob, tell me why you love it so much.
Well, it started out, we have a daughter, and she's graduated college now, but when we went there first was the Anne of Green Gables series of books that she was interested in, and there's a house, a homestead there that's sort of a museum piece, and you can't miss the Potato Museum as well. But more importantly, it's one of those places that seems to be remote. When we were starting, there wasn't a bridge that went across, and you were required to take the ferry. And that was an excursion unto itself for the kids, you know. But the feeling of remoteness and being away and no cell phones and all of that, I think was more relaxing for the parents, and the kids had all the other options. But a beautiful spot to be, the red clay soils of the potato fields, and stark contrast to what we see around, you know, the States. Just a beautiful sight.
It is, you know, it is that whole sense, as you were saying, of being kind of afloat as if in another world. The I think it was called the Confederation Bridge linked it to mainland not all that many years ago, and it has changed the island, but only marginally, I think. It remains a very serene and very picturesque, lovely little pocket of Canada. It's part of the Maritime Provinces or the Atlantic Provinces, together with Nova Scotia, which is much better known. It's one of the neighboring islands, or New Brunswick. Newfoundland is there as well. And all of these areas are very, almost of another time, very quiet, you know, streets, not highways, but byways that kind of meander through beautiful farmland. Great seafood, because it's all you know, out of the water and onto your plate that afternoon, lobster, halibut, all of that. And this Anne of Green Gables thing is something of a local phenomena there. They get over 300,000 visitors a year, many of them from Asia, because this book was translated into over a dozen languages. So it's been read by every 12-year-old girl around the world who comes to see this house where Anne of Green Gables lived. It's something of a local phenomena. They have a musical based on this thing, etc. And then the parents have all of this other lovely stuff to, you know, enjoy as well in the meantime. But it's a great destination, and not that many people, certainly from the Midwest, I think. Even here on the East Coast, we only know of it barely.
We're talking with Patricia Schultz. She is the author of the new book, 1,000 Places to See in the USA and Canada Before You Die. We've talked with Patricia Schultz before on this program about her first book, about the 1,000 places to see in the entire world before you die. And we also talked when that book was made into a series for the Travel Channel. I'm very happy to have her back because travel is one of my passions, and I trust it's one of yours too. Are you planning on crossing off one of the destinations on your travel list this summer? Somewhere in Wisconsin, somewhere in the nation, somewhere in Canada. Join us as we talk about some of the 1,000 places to see in the USA and Canada. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. We want to know some of your favorite destinations in America or Canada, or some places that you are hoping to visit. Our guest might be able to suggest some things you might want to do in the community or the region. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Subpoenas have been issued in two major cases pitting Congress against the Bush administration over executive power. After 9, Kathleen and her guest will discuss the dismissal of 9 U.S. attorneys and the authorization of warrantless domestic surveillance. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We are talking about travel this hour and some of the 1,000 places to see in the USA and Canada before you die. You can read about all of them in our guest's new book. Patricia Schultz, our guest, and our next caller is John in Chippewa Falls. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
The number one place on my list that I would want to see is Big Sur, California. I've seen pictures, and it's just awesome place from the photos, and I'm a little familiar with California and, you know, the redwoods, and have been there, but not the Big Sur. I've heard that there's a better time of the year to visit due to the fog that comes in and covers things up, and just wonder if that's on the list and what you know about it.
I saw it on there.
Yeah, you know, it's part of what's called the Pacific Coast Highway, which runs for 1,000 miles, I guess it's the full duration of the California coast from the Oregon border up north down to Baja, California, south of San Diego. But that 160 or perhaps 90-mile segment before, during, and after Big Sur is said to be the highlight of the highlight. It already is a magnificent drive that, for the most part, is pretty uncommercialized because the California government did have the foresight to buy up and protect most of that coastline, as well they should have, because it's just so very beautiful. And the area around Big Sur is also where San Simeon, the Hearst estate, is, Randolph Hearst's estate, which is one of the most extravagant, over-the-top private residences ever built, and very interesting to visit. And also the Monterey Peninsula is in that area. So there's so much to see. And, you know, the fog, I don't know. I know there's always a fog in parts of California. I would say June, they have the smog, fog, June gloom, they call it. I don't know if it spills over and reaches the area of Big Sur. I do know that wherever there's something awesome to see, you can expect traffic jams and people, and that's true as well for the summer months along the coastal area. But, you know, what do? Stay home. I would just as soon be behind, you know, 20 other cars going at a nice 55 miles an hour than be sitting on my couch watching it on a flat-screen television.
Yeah. John, thanks very much for the call. Happy to see and hear the Milwaukee Festival is on your list, and Milwaukee's Summerfest is going on as we speak.
Yeah, you know, I know that it's the end of June, July, right?
Yep.
It's party town.
There's a festival for everything.
I guess so.
Yeah, there's a German Fest and Polish Fest and... Irish Fest, there's everything.
And there's an Indian powwow. I remember that. That kind of surprised me. But I was there for the Polish Fest with Polish friends and was Polish for the moment. And I know your festivals have festivals.
Can't have too many festivals.
No, you can't.
Did you have a kielbasa or something?
Yeah.
Lynette in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, my husband and I honeymooned in Friday Harbor. And then we took the trolley over to Vancouver Island, and it was so beautiful. And my husband found a biking wine tour that we took, and it was so beautiful through the countryside. It's an awesome area.
That you're talking about the San Juan Islands off the coast of Seattle, off the coast of Washington.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're right there at the British Columbia border with, you know, you can kind of... walk to, well, not from the islands, but on mainland, you can walk into Canada from that area of northwestern America. And the San Juan Islands, I'm so glad you mentioned them because I'm going there next week. I'm going back. They're one of my most special memories of travel in that area of the country. There are 100 of them, but there are only 4 or 5 that are inhabited. And Friday Harbor is on the island of San Juan. And my favorite is Orcas Island, and it's named after this pod of 60 orca whales that spend every summer there. And it's great kayaking and biking land because it's very gentle rolling hills, but great for biking and kayaking because you can kayak out amongst the whales and the bald eagles flying overhead. It's just a pristine, beautiful, beautiful area. And like you said, you can take the ferry to the other islands or else just north to Vancouver Island, which is so interesting as well. That whole area of British Columbia is just beautiful.
And we actually did try to kayak with the whales. They weren't being cooperative when we were there. We camped actually on San Juan Island. And but we did kayak with some porpoises, which
were
really amazing because they kind of swam with our kayak.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, it was the first time we went kayaking. It was so cool.
Yeah, that area is so rich in wildlife, you know, and whether you're on the mainland or out amongst the islands, and then you go up into Vancouver Island, as I said, and the Gulf Islands, the San Juan Islands become the Gulf Islands, which are Canada's counterpoint to the San Juan Islands. So if you have any love for getting off of the mainland quite easily, because you don't need to fly, you can take the ferry system, that's the place to do it. And it's an area of North America that is known to certainly Seattle. It's where they all go to kind of decaffeinate on the weekends and on their summer breaks. But outside of the Northwest, they're just not all that well known. And they like it that way, I know.
Yeah, Lynette, thanks very much for the call. It sounds wonderful. The Apostle Islands are in your book in northern Wisconsin. Did you happen to go kayaking Lake Superior for the sea caves along the Apostle Islands National Seashore?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And it's just fascinating, really. And again, as a New Yorker, you know, get me out in these national parks. I think the Apostle Island just a few years ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago, was nominated by National Geographic as being the most beautiful national park in all of North America. So if you have it there in your backyard in that wonderful little town of Bayfield and that great old late 1900s inn that's called Rittenhouse Inn.
The old Rittenhouse,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you almost owe it to yourself. I mean, you gotta go.
You've convinced me. I've been there, but I'll go again. Terry and Oconomowoc, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First of all, I want to tell you that I just gave my grandson your book for his high school graduation.
Oh, nice. What a great idea.
And he's a Navy kid. My son just got out of the Navy after 21 years. And so he said in his thank you note the other day, he said, I've even been to some of those places already, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I figured he ought to have that book so as he starts out in life, he could figure out where he's going.
Yeah, and where he wants to go.
That's right. I also wondered if you have in that book anything about Ten Chimneys.
I don't see it.
Ten Chimneys?
That is the residence of two Hollywood actors, and I can't remember their name right now.
Yes, Lindsay, what is it, Lindsay Infante or something like that?
No.
Yes.
Again, more material for my sequel, I think.
Yeah.
And where is it?
It's actually a building that has 10 chimneys in it.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, it was their summer home, from what I understand.
Oh, that's always wonderful.
We just moved into this area, and it is not far from here. So we still want to see it sometime. I haven't seen it myself yet.
See, I think we all need to create our own list of 1,000 places.
Actually, right.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Terry. And that's what you hope you can do with this book, too, right?
Yeah, because, you know, when people think that this or the other book is all about these being the only 1,000 places to see, that was never my intention or my goal to have people think that it kind of began and ended with this list. This is nothing more than a kind of sampling or a smorgasbord of what is out there and is, you know, for us to see and experience. But, you know, we all have our own lists, and they should be growing works in progress. You know, as you get older, your interests change or they expand, or you learn about other places, or, as I mentioned before, you're on your way to see, you know, Shipshawana, and you happen upon the sand dunes of Indiana on your way there. So nothing is ever written in stone. My 1,000 places, your 1,000 places, it's all wonderful, and it all gets us up and out and has us understand that there's just so much more beyond what we have in our little, you know, 24-hour day back home.
It was Alfred Lunt and Lynn Fontaine who used to live at Ten Chimneys. Julia in Bain is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was wondering if the Upper Mississippi River made your list.
Oh, sure. And one of the entries that I believe I put in Missouri because of the whole Hannibal Mark Twain thing was the Great River Road, which goes from, I believe it passes through 11 states on its way from where the Mississippi originates in Minnesota down through Iowa, Illinois, Missouri, into Louisiana, Mississippi, Louisiana. So, the upper bluffs near La Chienne, Wisconsin, and Red Wing up near Winona, that area, do you mean?
Yeah, it's really pretty. I've got a houseboat in Trempealeau, which is on Lock and Dam 6.
Yeah. No, I love that area, and it's so beautiful. And again, I had always thought in terms of the Mississippi, the lower states, you know, in Missouri, Mississippi, Louisiana, et cetera. So I was fascinated when I went up to the upper bluffs, and it's such beautiful countryside. Yeah,
yeah. You get more bluffs and everything, and it can be a really inexpensive vacation for, like, if a few couples got together and rented a houseboat and just...
Yeah.
Head north. It's beautiful.
I know. You know, it's great. And again, there's, you know, so much to see, and it's such an inherently important part of our history, one of the great rivers of the world, not just of North America. And to follow even a part of it for a couple hundred miles, or even 15 or 20 miles to follow that Great River Road is, you know, a real history lesson, I think, and cultural lesson as well, and geography lesson.
Yeah. Julia, thank you. Edie in Baraboo, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. We're kind of thinking of going to South Dakota. I would love to go see the Crazy Horse Monument and, of course, Mount Rushmore. What else is there in that area to...
Wild Drug.
Don't laugh. Wall Drugs is probably one of the most famous destinations anywhere on the planet. But, you know, the Crazy Horse Monument is really fascinating. I was talking before about this list of places to see a work in progress. Well, if you want to talk works in progress, this is probably one of the most world-famous works in progress that's been going on since forever and continues to. They say it's going to be another 100 years before it's finished. And that whole area is quite beautiful, the Badlands National Park, and Custer State Park is also near that area, which often as a road trip one incorporates into Mount Rushmore and Crazy Horse. And, of course, the famous Corn Palace in Mitchell. It's that palace that's, to a degree, reconstructed every year because the corn disintegrates. But it's been around since, I believe, the 1920s, and it draws thousands and thousands of people that come out of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And the town of Deadwood, have you heard of Deadwood?
Yeah.
Yeah, established during the Gold Rush, a little trip back to the late 1800s, and it's become a kind of casino destination recently. I think Kevin Costner is very involved in the Midnight Star Casino, and Jake's, the best hamburger in South Dakota.
And, of course, the Badlands are sort of in that area, right?
Yeah, the Badlands are just magnificent. Yeah. The South Dakota, North Dakota, but the section or the unit of the National Park of Badlands that's in South Dakota, I think, is the more picturesque.
I wonder if you want to weigh in on this controversy that has just erupted here. I got an email from a listener who says that I should go to the Reading Terminal Market in Philadelphia because they have great food and you can sample all sorts of things, including cheesesteak. And she says, be sure to have the Cheese Whiz option. It might sound gross, but it's fabulous. And consider
the only way to go. There's a person who knows their Philadelphia cheesesteak.
My producer, who is from Philadelphia, is shaking her head saying, no, don't do it. So that's the Cheese Whiz is the way to do it.
Oh, yeah. You ask for provolone or American cheese, and it's just sad. It's just not done.
And I'm sorry, it's Reading Terminal Market.
And they have a lot of the Amish people from nearby Lancaster come in every morning with their homemade pies and preserves and handiwork, and it's very interesting, and you can talk to them. They're usually young people, and it's quite fascinating. And Bassett's ice cream originated in Philadelphia, and there in the marketplace you can go to the Bassett booth, and it's some of the best ice cream in Philly. I dare say Pennsylvania.
I can't wait. One quick one from Jan in North Freedom. Almost out of time, Jan.
Okay, this will be very quick, and I just wanted to mention that west of the Wisconsin River in the Driftless area, in the Baraboo Bluff area of southwestern part of the state, west of the Wisconsin River, are the beautiful bluffs and hiking, and you find yourself in another world if you can work yourself in there.
The Driftless area is in her book. You'll be happy to know.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I wanted to mention, certainly one would not want to miss tomorrow, the parade in Witwen. Witwen, that is in that area.
The 4th of July parade in Witwen is not in the book, but worth checking out, don't
dear.
You say?
Oh, no. But I can be there by tomorrow.
We have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us, Patricia Schultz.
Oh, thank you very much, and have a wonderful summer.
Yes, you too. Patricia Schultz, author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Thanks to Carmen Jackson and Karen Prager for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.